The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
Oh, it is Wednesday. And by the way, according to that thing we call a calendar, it is the first, but let's just double check, right? 19th day of January. I had to lean forward to see that. 19th day of January, 2022, allegedly. So, who knows? You know what? I was just saying to the wonderful, wonderful co-host that I have on in the first hour here, Maria Heller. I was just saying, I don't even know if I want to read the date anymore, but I've gotten in a habit of doing it. And you know what? I just broke it and screwed it up. So, good. Anyway, Woden's Day, the middle of the week. Here we go. And we're going to get right to it. Indeed, I have the mouth that roars with me, Maria Heller, Maria.net. In case you don't know, and if you listen to my show and you don't know who Maria Heller is, I don't know what to tell you. 22 years online, anyway, speaking the truth to you. One way or another, interviewed so many different people. Forget about it. You don't know who Maria Heller is? Come on. Anyways, my twice a month, generally speaking, although occasionally not so because something might come up or whatever, hell and high water. If you don't know that, then I guess you're not a member at Ocelli.com and you haven't signed up at Maria.net. Two things you should be doing to support the media that supports you. And in the second hour, another independent media, well, you know, I can't match Maria Heller up with nobody. So, James Corbett, and this, of course, is the design of a Wednesday night producer that I've now added, and stay tuned, there might be more news on that soon. Anyway, enough of all this. Maria Heller, yes indeed, the mouth that roars, yes indeed, Maria.net, artist, author, podcaster, broadcaster, I mean, you got so many different things I could say, but I just call you Mom. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How you doing, Chuck?
I call her Mom, and just a reminder in case somebody doesn't know this. I know if you listen to my show, you've heard it already, but maybe Maria brought some new friends over. You never can tell. So, no, Maria did not physically bear me, but in a very spiritual, very direct psychological sense, I very honestly call her Mom. So that's that in case you hear me say Mom and somebody gets confused out there. Although, she is from the East Coast. She is Italian.
So, and you are the same age as my kids.
And I think I'm exactly the same age as your son, aren't I?
Right.
Yeah, so here we go. Anyway, there is a personal relationship here, and that's true. So no matter what, that's the way that is. Anyways, Maria, you know, we do cover a lot of stuff on Hell and High Water, that's for sure. And we could be talking about international things today. We could be talking about, oh, I don't know, the socio-political situation. We could be talking about the general psychological issues that seem to be, well, we used to think of it just as an American problem, but appears to be worldwide. We could talk about the pandemic. We could talk about a lot of things, but I defer to you, Mom. What is on your mind tonight? Anything in particular?
Happiness and joy. It wow. looks like even though Trump loaded the Supreme Court with useless pieces of dirt, they voted against him holding his records back for the January 6th committee.
Ooh.
So that had to burn. And then you have Letitia Jones in New York who says she's got tons of evidence of Trump falsifying his records and books and whatnot. And I made a post on social media and said, well, you want to act like Al Capone, you're going to go down like Al Capone.
Yeah, well, see, I wish I could share your optimism there, but my understanding is, you know, if you have a privileged position or you appear to have money, whether you have less money than you appear to have or not, doesn't matter, you usually don't pay a hefty price for anything.
Well, he's got charges coming at him from Scotland, too, for all the manipulation he did on his golf course there.
Oh, yeah.
And then let's not leave out Iran and their wonderful video last week, which, of course, cost the guy who posted it his Twitter account, where Iran said, we'll never forget, and posted a video of a drone going over Trump while he was playing golf. So, listen, I get my hopes high.
Okay, well, look, there's that. I didn't expect this. And you started with happiness and joy.
Well, that is happiness and joy for me. No one said I was an angel.
Look, not at all. Again, you know, I am accustomed to, I got to tell you, I'm accustomed to strong people. I don't know. Growing up where I did, when I did, it just seemed as though people had to have some strength. And I don't mean this in a barbarian sort of way. I don't mean that you shouldn't have empathy or you should be, a psychopath completely devoid or a sociopath would be the correct term, completely devoid of, you know, mercy on anybody else. I don't understand a lot of what I'm seeing, though, Marie. I got to be honest with you, because it seems like after every single event, whether it's political or it's, you know, the social engineering that is apparent right now regarding, not just politics, but I mean everything. You know, the urge to cry foul has come up so often. I don't know. This is something that's been emotionally bothering me, and I want you to help me navigate it a little bit because I don't understand where we're at. And this isn't about, well, you're just about being a tough man and toxic masculinity. No, I mean to tell you that the women I remember when I was younger were, you know, the adult women were tougher than most of the men that I encounter. I mean, generally speaking, and I don't understand this. Why is everybody seemingly acting like a victim all the time? I mean, I know we're all in the crosshairs of a lot of things, but at the same time, crying about it is not going to solve it. You know what I mean? And I'm not making a reference to, by the way, I just want to make this very clear in case somebody misunderstands. I'm not referencing anything from the show I just aired on the network. I'm talking about people are getting upset about things that don't even appear to impact them directly. They're getting emotionally involved in things that are at a distance. They're getting bent out of shape, and I mean literally bent out of shape, from a distance and not concerning themselves with things which are right in front of them. What is that all about?
Well, you have to disassociate. And then you look at, you want to know about the masculinity in America. Just look at the drop in male testosterone over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a friend who works at a clinic in the valley here in Arizona. And all they do is testosterone shots for men. And I said, well, are the guys, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s? She said, hell no. She says, we're seeing guys in their 30s.
That's ridiculous. I
think that the drugs, the American diet, so many things contribute to the lack of real masculinity. And I'm not talking about a caveman guy. I'm talking about a man who's assertive, a man who is commanding. What we used to consider masculine, you know, back in my day. And it's very rare that I see a masculine man these days.
Well, and that's the thing, is like I said, when I go back in time and I think about before, you know, GMO food was as large as it is, because that did happen in the course of my lifetime, Maria. You know, GMO food was sort of this thing they told us would help us feed the world. It wasn't everywhere like it is now. You know, clearly the medical industrial complex has succeeded in creating many addicts/customers when it comes to a whole lot of medicine, alleged medicine, I should say, not real medicine, but you know what I'm talking about, between psychotropics and painkillers what's the other thing, benzoids. I mean,
listen, there's so many medications out there that a lot of men are on, whether they're on it for diabetes, whether they're on it for ED, whether they're on it for, you know, prostate cancer, so many of those medications absolutely kill a man's sexuality, sex drive. Their penis doesn't work like it used to, if it works at all. Mm. And now I saw the other night, I think I was watching Stephen Colbert, where the man and men in the United States are finding that their penises are shrinking. And, of course, they're blaming it on COVID.
See, okay. I'm sorry I laughed, all right? But everything is getting blamed on COVID, and I'm sorry, it didn't start. Look, let's just rewind here. Let's just say that the novel coronavirus first showed up 2 years ago, Maria. The problem of your package got smaller. The problem of your intensity got lower. The problem of all these types of things didn't start 2 years ago.
Of course not. You know, I saw an article tonight that said that scientists are fearing that we're already at the beginning of the sixth mass extinction. Now, when I did my shows back in the day with Dave McGowan, we already talked about being at the start of the sixth mass extinction. I think we're right in the middle of it right now.
Well, it seems to me as though maybe the middle wouldn't be accurate, but clearly we're not at the tipping point. We're past that. Because I read a story just today that came out about the reduced birth rate in China, of all places.
Right.
Where it's like the first time in I don't know how long that, see, and this comes down to weird terms, by the way, like replacement rate and stuff like that, which we have seen going down. You and I have talked about this over the past few years on Hell and High Water. Look, the replacement rate's going down. Is it just about the masculine side of the equation? I don't know.
Because... No, I mean, I think that a lot has to do with the birth rate going down is what I've reported on my show, Facts and Figures.
Mm-hmm.
People can't afford to have children. Even the Pope got pissed off and said that he said that people are selfish for not having children and just getting a dog. But you know what? A dog's a lot easier to raise. A dog is always loyal. And a dog's a whole lot cheaper.
Well, I'll tell you
what. So what do they expect these young people to do today? You can't afford to buy a house. Your job wages suck. You know, they're smarter than my generation because, you know, back in the day, people just kept having kids and then worried about how to feed them later on.
Yeah.
But these kids today are a lot smarter and say, yeah, we can't afford this.
Okay, but in fairness to your parents, because again, you are the appropriate age to be my mom, so I could say that you're a baby boomer, you know, I'm a Generation Xer, but you coming out of the baby boom time, right? Not exactly. I always forget the exact year you were born, to be honest with you. I'm terrible at that. But I know time period wise, you're the appropriate age to be my mom. So I know you're coming out of that era where there was a baby boom, but in fairness to your parents, Maria, okay.
All right.
You didn't have to stress as much because you could afford to live. And you weren't getting squeezed to the point, you know, like right now we're all experiencing, and I don't know anybody who isn't except, you know, the media is finally talking about it. Oh, look, we have equations here showing you that inflation is on the rise, which I've been trying to say for years now that nobody wanted to report on. All of the, you know, look, the stock market's doing well. Look, the economy's doing well. And I'm going, for who? Anyway.
Right, for the super rich. I think it was 10 billionaires that really raked it in, should I say, over COVID. So the rich will always find a way to make money on what everybody else is suffering from.
Oh.
You know, when I was a kid, you know, it was probably the last generation where only my father had to go to work. And not to say we were rich, we were far from it, but he was able to feed his family on a barber's salary. That ended with my generation for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, even as a baby boomer, being smart, I guess I was smarter than the average bear when I was young, I decided that two children were more than enough. Okay, one boy, one girl, okay, tubes tied, and there you have it.
Yeah.
But when you look at people because of ridiculous sky god religions, who are forced to keep having children, you know, from the Catholics to the Mormons and who knows who else. I'm stunned when I see some of these families out and about with, you know, 8, 9 kids. And I'm like, wow, how do they feed them?
Yeah, I it's a mystery to me because, again, when I came into adulthood, and I know, Maria, you were far into adulthood because by the time I was an adult, so was at least one of your kids. You know, two, actually. Yeah, because there's an older one than
your
son.
Well, look, my
right?
daughter will be 50 this year.
Yeah, okay. So, actually, yeah, I'm right in between your two, I think.
Right, my son's 42.
Yeah, well, I'm
49. I like to tease them every now and then. I say, wow, I have old kids.
So I am closer to G as H. All right. I always think of myself more akin to your son, but I guess I'm closer to G as H. But either way, we come to adulthood in about the year 1990. And by that time, there is no way that you were considering, you know, the old nuclear family there, where you were going to get together with a partner and have a child. There was no way you were considering that without both of you working or somebody having a real good job. And there was no way that, you know, somebody was going to do common work and you were going to be able to pay for housing. I forget about owning anything. Just paying the rent was going to be impossible unless you had two people working or you had somebody else working like a dog, three jobs, something like this. Maybe. Right.
Well, let's go to 1990.
Sure.
Okay. I was working in 1990. I was probably making 1990 maybe $25,000-$30,000 a year.
Yep.
My husband was making really good money. He was working for a big firm in Manhattan. And yet we owned a home, but we couldn't afford to go out to eat, not even once a week.
Right.
Because it all went to bills. So between the two of us, we're looking at maybe $80,000 in 1990 and couldn't afford to go out to eat.
Yeah, see, that was okay, though, for, I mean, you were surviving. You know what I mean? It was.
Yeah, we were surviving because I was smart when I was younger and got my first house, which I was able to, you know, buy up.
Hmm.
But today, most people can't afford that first house. I mean, right here in scummy Phoenix, Arizona, which I wouldn't live in if you paid me for free, the average price of a shit home is $404,000. Well, you find me a 20-year-old who can afford that.
Yeah, right. Good luck on that. I don't think, you know, your side hustle on, you know, working for Grubhub or whatever is going to cut it.
Right. I mean, my first house was the same price as my car. It was $29,000. That's hard for people to imagine today.
Yeah.
But 5 years later, I was able to sell that house for $125,000.
Mm-hmm.
5 years after that, I was able to sell the second house for $250,000.
Yes.
Those days are over.
You see, but those days are not quite over. It's just, here's the problem. Now, we're seeing the spike in the real estate, but nobody's making any more money. See, this is the thing. You know, at that time, you had
it's
raises.
It's going to crash. It's crashed. I've seen these crashes since Ronald Reagan.
Of course.
So it's just a matter of time. You know, when I got into my second house, I was lucky to get in at 9.5% interest. My neighbor, who tried to buy the house that was being built at the same time, she ended up paying 18% interest on her mortgage. Reagan, who killed this economy, who the Republicans still want to worship, even though he was as senile as the day is long.
Well, and then Clinton opened it up for the predatory credit card companies to charge you way more than that on interest for things that you didn't even need. You know, forget about housing. So, I mean, nobody's done us any favors here. Course of my life.
No, of course not.
Okay.
Listen, my father used to say something. You know, we were around when the first credit cards came out. Okay.
Mm.
And I think the first credit card my dad got was for Sears, which is out of business now. Okay. What was it? 150 years as an American company.
Yeah.
And what he told me when he got the card and he showed it to all of us, we were little kids when I was maybe, I don't know, 10, 11. And he said to me, let me teach you something right now. You never use a card like this unless you have the money to pay off the bill when it comes.
Right.
And you know what? I have, till this day, never paid one dime in interest on any of my credit cards.
Well, you know, that is a way to go. But now that's not what they taught us necessarily, Maria. I mean, you might have taught your kids the same lesson. But that's not what the way the world was by the time I was an adult. Now it was a bad thing to do it that way because they won't extend your credit. See, you can get more credit if you start paying them some interest. And that stands to this day, by the way. I mean, it's not just a Clinton era thing or a, you know, Bush the first era thing. It still stands today. You have to give them something in order for them to give you some more credit. I mean, if you're part of the moneyed class, you can get loans all day on whatever you want.
And never have to pay them.
And just, you know, bail out on them and pay pennies on the dollar for whatever the hell it is you bought. No problem if you're rich. But if you're, well, somebody like me, Yeah, that's a good way to have people hound you until you're dead and maybe even after you're dead.
Right. Why don't they teach children about money and finance in school anymore? You know, when I was a kid in school, they even actually, I mean, I'm sure very few people still use checks. I do, because it's a good way to keep track of your money.
Right.
But they taught us how to write out a check. They taught us how to write out an envelope. They taught us how to do a profit and loss statement. They taught us how to do a budget. Who does that today?
They taught that in what they used to call home economics briefly when I was a kid. But
But you know, how many times do you see the same memes on social media? You know, we should be teaching our children how to plant food in school.
Oh, well, that would be helpful. You know, things, see, therein is the problem. Like my kids, I mean, I've got kids now, and, you know, I got them in a couple different age groups. Right now, my two oldest, I am sad to say, both of them vaccinated, now both of them positive for COVID. But anyway, the two of them, that's another subject we might get into in the next 40 minutes. But, you know, Katie and Junior there, what can I say?
Listen, I think it was my last news show where I read the facts. The facts were so long, I could only read so many. Mm. And I gave out, everybody should go to vaccineimpact.com of the damage that these shots have done to people. Now, and the list is never ending.
Well, right. And, you know, you should not be at all surprised by that, considering it is the same corporations that, you know, again.
Of course. You know, I forget who it is. I think it's the leader of the medical professions or whatever in Israel. I have that story for tomorrow's show with the real facts. But he ripped on Pfizer really bad and said that Pfizer just made a vaccine to make money and that his vaccine is better. And when you look at how much money Pfizer has made, and now they want to push a fourth booster to totally kill your immune system, it makes sense.
Well, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense in the way they advertise it. Because what do they tell you? Right now, it's people like me, Maria, who have refused it, that are actually endangering all of society.
Yeah, my answer to that is simple. If your vaccine works, what do you give a shit whether I have one or not?
Yeah, well, see, that's all.
And I have said that since the polio vaccine, okay? And if your vaccine works, why do you care whether I have one or not? And if your vaccine works, why do you need a booster every 2 months?
You know what?
But people just will do what they're told to do, and, well, oh, well, less people on the planet.
Well, yeah, unfortunately. And here's the thing, you know, you and I have talked about this privately and publicly, I think. So I'm going to reveal something here, but I've told you about this with my young son before this COVID thing. You know, where it was like the vaccinated children's parents giving me trouble about, well, I don't know if I want my child around your unvaccinated child. And I'm like, same argument, by the way, Maria. Well, if your vaccine works, what are you worried about my kid for?
Exactly. And you know what? Your kid's better off not playing with kids of dumbass parents like that, because by the fourth grade, they're clones of their parents.
Well, and they're shedding, honestly. They're shedding all this crap onto him. He gets sick when he hangs around with vaccinated kids. So anyway,
exactly.
Look, I didn't want to go into the vaccine thing because I want to stick to this other subject, and I'll tell you why. You know, I have been criticized as of late that shocked, right? Aren't you shocked?
Yeah, shocked. If you're not being criticized, you're not doing your job right, Chuck.
No, absolutely true. But this one bothered me a little because years ago, I don't know if you remember, but I was telling you that I got a criticism about having too many women on my show, right? Now, that was years ago. Okay, and it's some time has passed, and to be honest with you, the opportunities to have female voices or feminine voices, I should say, on my show have dwindled a bit. And it's not because I actively did that, but now I've got people complaining to me that I don't have enough women on the show.
Well, listen, there are very few women out there that are worth having on the show. And less men worth having on the show.
Oh, I know.
Because everybody's scared shit to talk. Everybody's scared shitless to give their own opinion, to present a different view of the news.
Right.
That's an issue I've had for 22 years.
But I'm just saying, I don't actively do that. It's just that it's funny to me because all
Well, tell them to recommend the women they think you should have on the show.
Oh, you know, I already did that. I said, please, yeah, by all means.
The answer. Who should I put on? Should
tell
I put on
get.
Nikki Haley? You know? Should I put on Marjorie Greene Taylor? I mean, who do they want you to put on your show?
Well, I got you tonight, so, you know, give me five.
Well, luckily, I don't have a very soft feminine voice.
No,
so
but...
upset some of those people because I'm not an eyelash batting girl. Never have been.
No, but it's even better though because you are basically a gang of women onto yourself. So Maria counts as five women. Put that in my column. Anyway, and you know what else? You can put another check in the man column too because she's probably more man than a lot of the men I encounter. Anyway,
well, it's like I told my children, I said to them, "You got your looks from your fathers." But you got your balls from me.
There you have it. So, look, back to this whole issue, though, that we started with, sort of, where I love this.
I'm in a feisty mood today. I have my eyes dilated. I still barely can see the screen.
Oh, my. All right. Well, listen, I appreciate that you're on here with your eyes dilated. I really do.
Hey, listen, the good news was my doctor said I'll probably never have cataracts. He's never seen healthier eyes.
Well, you know what's funny about that is I went and I was struggling for quite a while with the glasses, you know, having the wrong prescription. And it took me a very long time. I had, you know, steady headaches for months. But when I finally got in to see the specialist, here's the funny thing. I'm now pretty much adjusted to the glasses. And don't tell anybody or anything, but my vision is actually up a little.
Great. That's great news. But you know what? I remember the same doctor calling his other doctors in. In one of our visits, because he said, you have to see this woman's eyes, and she's a vegetarian.
Ah.
So he was blown away. And here I am, 72 years young, and this is what the doctor told me today. And what was my retort? I said to him, but all my friends already had cataract surgery. And he's like, yeah, you probably never will need it.
You know, funny thing, I don't have the cataract issue either. They keep checking for it, but it doesn't
happen.
You're
a little young for that.
Well, yeah, yes and no. That's the funny thing. But anyway, I don't want to go eye doctor to eye doctor on this.
All right. Where are we going with this? You had something you were starting on before that.
I did, but it's pretty much out of my head. Because look, this is the fun I have with Maria. I really do, and unfortunately, we do have to cover some dark topics on occasion, you know. And occasionally, we get angry. But I'm trying to have a good time with you tonight, Mom, because I want to just let you fly, pretty much. Whatever else is on your mind, I know. Yes, indeed, the Trump thing is one thing, but I mean,
joy for joy. Listen, after 4 years of covering that horrific grifter piece of crap from New York that I grew up with. Every New Yorker always knew he was a grifter, a cheat, a whore master. The list goes on and on. After having to cover his disgustingness for 4 years, it will give me nothing but pure joy to cover his downfall.
Mm. No,
and there you have it. No. I mean, for me, it's like a drug.
Well, allow me to load you the gun before I hand it to you, because
it's already loaded.
Yeah, I know, but we can always put a couple more rounds. Okay, thing is, I found it funny that this January 6th thing over the past couple of days splashing headlines in the MSM. Of course, you know, this is ridiculous because I don't think a single thing is going to come of it when it comes to the, you know, select committee and all that. And I know that we're probably looking at a turnaround here in 2022 where his allies are going to retake power in the House and the Senate. And then we're going to have the Biden Inquisition. So I'm pretty much...
I don't agree.
No?
I don't agree.
Oh, okay. I would love to hear what it is you think, but let me just add this to your chambers for a sec. I found it funny that it's Guilfoy and Eric Trump, of all people, mm-hmm. that they actually subpoenaed their communications. Because I thought to myself, you know, I realized that the special ed kids are at the school, but usually they're not on the sports teams. They're not the featured players. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, very much like this is some sort of massive kindergarten here. The special ed kindergarten, which is Eric Trump, I mean, please. And, right. And Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Look at that little piece of twerp. In 6 hours, he pled the fifth 500 times.
Yeah, but see.
And it was his own disgusting bag of crap father, sperm donor, that said anybody that pleads the fifth is guilty.
Yeah, well, you know.
But you see, his fans have a short memory and obviously brain damage, so they don't want to hear that. They just want to dress up and defecate all over the United States flag in their stupid-ass costumes.
Well, didn't
now, what did you think of the fact when he held his rally in Arizona and Florence, where basically a federal prison is, too bad he didn't hold it inside there, that he locked the gates to the parking lot and his people couldn't leave. A lot of people were leaving early because it was the same old bullshit, same old lies. Some of them actually pissed themselves waiting for him to open the gates so they could actually get out. And yet, they'll still kiss his ass. I just don't even understand it.
I don't either. But the thing that kills me about this is also somebody mentioned in the chat room, Roger Stone. There's another guy who pleaded the fifth not too long ago to a series of questions, right? It's interesting how, you know, as long as his people are pleading the fifth, it's cool. But anybody else must be guilty.
Exactly. Well, Roger Stone, I understand, was on Steve Bannon's show. Why Steve Bannon was let out on bail, I have no idea. I never would have allowed that. And they were both bitching about the fact that their favorite channel, Fox News, did not air his ridiculous rally in Arizona.
Mm.
So I'm like, yeah, baby. But... there's still a lot of dumb racist people in Arizona too. Not as much, I don't think, as Florida. Florida takes the cake. I'm sure you saw DeSantis now pass this bill or wants to pass the bill where you can't hurt white people's feelings by talking about history.
Man, you know, and look, Florida is effectively an open-air insane asylum. My apologies to listeners in Florida, but not really, because it is crazy there, and I'm just north of it, so I'm aware. But you
know what? I'll be the first place to sink as the waters rise.
Listen, if that's what global warming takes from the U.S., okay.
So long, and listen, just so you people know, I mean, I have not only listeners in Florida and great friends, but most of my family lives there. And yet, I'd still be okay with it if the Lord God himself decided to smite it. I'd still be okay with it.
You're willing to let that go.
Hey, I've warned them. They don't listen, so oh well.
Hey, look.
All out of empathy, Chuck. I'm all out of empathy.
This is the show I did not expect tonight, guys. Just so you know.
I did a glass of wine, and my eyes are still looking like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds right now.
Yeah, but I know you didn't smoke a joint tonight, because if you did...
No,
you...
that's later.
Okay.
That's right before dinner.
All right, cool.
How else can anybody survive in this world without cannabis? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm taking some THC drops and we're done. So, anyway. You know, and I've got another hour to do, but before
good
we,
luck.
Yeah, thank you. Before we, see, I'm having fun though. This is a lot of fun. So with the last,
listen, people have to remember to have fun. The only thing that keeps you sane in this crazy, messed up world right now is laughter. Okay, laughter. Our children are having nervous breakdowns. Our children are suffering depression, anxiety, so many things from this freak bull crap of shutting them off from life because of COVID. Why aren't people concerned about that? We have an epidemic of mental illness in this country because of COVID.
Well, you know what the excuse was for only releasing 10% of what's still withheld in the JFK files recently, too, right?
No. What was their excuse?
Oh, COVID, of course.
Oh, of course. Oh, that's right. I said it on my show. COVID had to do with Kennedy getting murdered in 63.
Yeah.
How about the fact Martin Luther King's family is opening up his case one more time?
Well, good.
That's what I say.
You know, good on them, but even the ARRB, which did its work, you know, 25 years before Trump decided to succumb to the intelligence community, you know, that deep state thing. Yeah. Before he decided to give in to them in 2017 and not release most of the documents, there was 25 years before that somebody had done plenty of work to get these releases set up. So Trump didn't have an excuse. Biden doesn't have an excuse. You know what the excuse is? The system is protecting itself. But speaking of the system protecting itself, You said, I don't agree with you that we're going to see this flip in 2022. Now, I'm all for an alternate point of view. And, of course, you know, your wisdom is greater than mine. But I got to tell you, I dispute this. If you see it differently, I think, in fact, not only are we going to see a Republican shift, but we're going to also see... don't scream at me, Maria. But Trump come back in 2024 and actually win.
No.
But these are two things. So take it one at a time. This year, this coming year, coming very, very soon, the election season will start to heat up soon. I think
Republicans... Well, you'll see suddenly the Democrats will light a fire under their own boring asses.
You think?
And actually get some stuff done. I think that COVID's going to become like you can read in any paper today. Omicron is mild. It's on its way out. The numbers are dropping like crazy. That's going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the scum of the earth that the Republicans are running for office, they make Marjorie Taylor Greene look like she's a, you know, she's a Nobel Prize winner. I think Americans... are going to flip on that. And as far as Trump, first of all, you assume a lot. You assume that he won't be indicted. The only reason he wants to run is, again, to stay free, the same reason that he kept his presidency and tried to throw the election and started the insurrection. Trump's at the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's losing a lot of fans. He's losing a lot of fans inside his own Republican Party, having private meetings on how do we get rid of this guy. Well, how about a drive down Dealey Plaza? That worked before. That's my thought. Instead of coming up with all these convoluted bullshit things. And let's not forget the fact Trump's no spring chicken. Okay? He'll be, what, 76, 77? He's already shown severe signs of dementia, probably caused by untreated syphilis.
I agree there.
So, yeah, I don't think so. You know, he's talking the talk because... He's a gavone. You know what a gavone is.
Of course,
okay.
I do. He's
got a hard face, just like he pulls his same old lies and crap and stupidity. Did you see how much he encouraged white supremacists at his rally in Arizona? You know, talking about, oh, they put white people to the back of the line when it comes for getting tested for COVID or getting the shots. You know that's bullshit.
Yeah.
So he's still putting out his dog whistles to the insane among us, and yet he's still allowed to walk free. So I'm counting on Iran, and if Iran pulls it off, I'll be a very happy girl. And that might sound terrible to your audience, but I don't really care, because the anxiety and suffering I personally have suffered through the schmuck for all these years is worth it. Just to never see his face again, hear his voice again, or anything about him, his name will be stricken from history like worse than Hitler.
See,
that's my prediction for Donald Trump.
Okay, but I don't know. I can't see it that way at this point in time because I'm watching the Republican Party pretty much acquiesce to him.
Well, you know, on a spiritual level, things are moving really fast. And we're in a year where everything hidden is going to be revealed.
Well, see, there is where I wanted to go with the last part of our discussion tonight. Exactly there. And, of course, Mom got there before I did. That's what moms do.
If you look at the astrology, yeah, Biden's going to go up and down, but he's going to do all right. But Trump, you know, when he finally faces his maker, he will be in a living hell like no other soul on earth has ever been in. And I only hope I live long enough to see that.
See, fair enough. But in the meantime, we're still dealing with this fool. And I'm just saying.
And the media still covers him. It's the media's fault, too.
See,
mainstream media is garbage. It's a propaganda tool of the CIA. It has been since the 70s, probably earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You look at even Bill Clinton finally being exposed as CIA, just like George Herbert Walker Bush, CIA. You got to figure out, you know, people think, you know, oh, Biden's the president. No, he's not. Biden can only do what the puppet masters behind him tell him to do.
Of course.
Or he'll end up in a ditch, okay? And, you know, Trump was no different. You know, everybody thought he was a wild card, this and that. Trump was a useful idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And now he really doesn't have any more use because he's succeeded in dividing this country, making everybody hate each other. destroying our economy, you know, on and on and on. And what use, what could he possibly do to mess things up worse than he already did?
See, that's the thing. I have an ugly imagination, Maria. I think if somebody
wants to go nuclear, why not end it? Okay, we had a big media come past Earth yesterday. I don't know if you read about it.
Yes, it did.
And I got to tell you, I said, let it hit. That was my thought. I told you, I'm all out of empathy.
I hear you. Look, merciful empathy, merciful meteor of death. I mean, what can you say?
Bring it on, man. End it. End it. It would be the best thing for the planet, the best thing for the animals, the best thing for nature. The worst thing on this planet is human beings.
Look, I hear you, but okay. So I guess this is your hope for 2022 is the meteor of death, but your idea is
I'd be okay with that. I just when my prayers at night when I'm talking to the universe, I just say, just let me take my whole family with me when we go. Let's go all at the same time.
Well, you know what? Wherever I'm going next, it's going to be fun, and I'm not coming back here.
Oh, well, look at, you know, everybody from Betty White and everybody else that's dropping dead like flies these days because they want off. Who blames them? Well, the thing I say to them all is never come back here.
No, please don't.
Thanks for the memories. Never come back here.
Please don't. No, I'm with you. So with all of that in mind, okay, so now we've gotten to your predictions. We've gotten to your hopes for 2022.
Okay. Well, you know, Monica and I did a prediction show this week, actually.
That's where I was going.
And for your listeners, if you guys want to hear it, if I remember, I'll send it over to Gary Knoll's network so they can listen for free and maybe actually make a decision to support my show. Monica is a very positive, upbeat, sees things in the rose-colored glasses, and I love her for that. Right. She's also a really good numerologist and so much more. I'm the opposite. Mm. I didn't have much to say because I was feeling like crap having taken my son in for surgery the night before and not sleeping, and I was, like, exhausted, so I just let her roll with it. But when you look at, you know, astrologers I actually have respect for, one of them will be back on my show. God, what's his name? Jeff Warner, I think, from California. He'll be back on the show, I think next week. Next week, God help me, Maria. Next month, I think I booked it for Jeff Harmon.
Okay.
These are people that you should pay attention to. And if you think astrology is bullshit, tell that to Nancy Reagan. Okay.
Oh,
because
yeah,
that's how she directed Ronald Reagan's whole 4 years or whatever the hell years he was in office was through her astrologer. And if you're a religious freak, well, your Bible talks about astrologers being used all the time. So I pay attention to a lot of different sources.
Mm-hmm.
Look, in the olden days, I didn't want to live to see these days. But now that I'm here, I might as well stick around and see it all.
Yeah, look, I truly didn't expect it. I mean, I know I'm younger than you, but I didn't even expect to get this far. Now that I'm here, you know what? Let's take the ride.
I'm just going to keep making some noise.
That's the thing. I'm not going to be quiet about it. We're going to keep doing what we do. And again, you can go over to maria.net and do support Maria Heller, the mouth that roars, the one you've been hearing tonight, who has given me a totally unscripted, unplanned, and a different attitude than I expected, for sure.
Hey, I'm not always upbeat, Chuck. Sometimes,
I know,
like I tell a lot of my students, too, you can't just put out blessings. Sometimes you got to throw out some curses because it's called balance.
Absolutely. And you know what? Things are out of balance, Maria, for sure. They still are. I mean, it was a strange time that we did just get out of not too long ago. But, I mean, this whole COVID thing and the reality of it and how it's coming down on people, I don't know. I just don't know where.
Well,
it's
now that they've
going.
Blood sucked us all dry, you watch and see how fast. Oh, all of a sudden, COVID is. You even hear Fauci, ouchie, Fauci, saying, "Oh, COVID is now endemic. Something we're going to have to live with. It'll be just like the flu. You get a shot every year."
Well, that's the thing.
Well, I have a feeling that's what it was from the beginning.
Yeah, Well, and that's what I was saying the second they started talking about this and, you know, warp speed. Because don't forget, your warp speed poison came from the Trump administration.
Who's as warped as they come?
And, well, there you go. But the beauty of it.
You'd call it warp speed because he's warped.
Why not? But, you know, the warp speed process there and everything else, it was like, here's the funny thing. RFK's book, I know you're aware of it.
And yes, I haven't read it, but I've read excerpts of it.
Same here. I plan to get it, but it's one of those things I can't get in with the publisher to get him to send it to me. I don't know. People over there won't send it to me. But anyway, the thing
is... Send me the name of the publisher. I'll try and get it for you.
I'm pretty sure he's through Skyhorse right now, which is...
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I should be able to get that with no problem. Well, I've had so many of their authors on my show.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you can, you know, why don't we both get them? Because you and I both interviewed John Potash recently. By the way, no coordination between us. It happened on the same day for no apparent reason. I just want people to know that. But, we talked about the war on Tupac, basically. You know, and that is an interesting story that John... has written about, has a DVD about.
No, he doesn't just talk about the war on him. It's pretty much the war on any blacks, any black performer, any black rapper, any black civil rights leaders. And now you can see why when you have Trump saying, you know, white people are suffering to the back of the line, and you have Ron DeSantis in Florida passing a law that white people shouldn't be offended by anything.
Mm.
So, listen, you know, many years ago, I think I've told you this already, I had a black guy come into my insurance office, and he said to me, when you're white, you're born right, and when you're brown, you're born down, and when you're black, you got to get back. What's changed?
Not much. Except one thing I will say that is a little different from when I was a kid, just a little, is that they've given this victimhood a bit more air. To, you know what, the people that don't realize that they don't count because they're simply not part of the moneyed class. End of story. That's it.
It's been class warfare for decades in this country.
Right.
White people want to believe, like, you know, was it Lyndon Johnson? That's if you can convince enough dumb white people that black people are trying to take something from them, you know, they'll go after that and they'll stay in line.
Yep.
So as long as they can keep us fighting, people don't realize we have a class system in this country that makes Indians pale by comparison.
Well, and the fun part about it is it's not up front. See, at least in a place like India, you know up front what the deal is. Here, they're
right.
Trying
you want to shit, you're staying in shit.
Yeah,
but
that's
in America now, you know, they still give you that same crap. You know, anybody can be a millionaire. No, today, if you're born in shit, you stay in shit in America. You're born poor, you stay in there.
You guaranteed. I mean, that's what it is stay in your place, right?
Right. There's no way out anymore. I mean, I think maybe my generation was the last ones that had a way out.
Yeah, I agree there because, again, as I said, you know, coming into adulthood, trying to do things for myself, you know, I found that there was an impossible ceiling there for upward mobility. I mean, mm-hmm. Indeed, there are people, and this is always the argument, you know, well, what about the NBA players that make it out of the inner city? What about, yeah. There are the token exceptions. But
right,
in general.
Right. And people need to read Donald Jeffrey's book, Survival of the Richest, to find out all about the sports players and all the ignorant celebrities that we make in this country.
Right.
Give them tons and tons of money. When your school teachers and your garbage collectors and your grocery store workers, who are more important in your everyday life, get bupkis.
See, that's the thing I thought might change a little bit here during the, like, I was trying to see the positive, and I know that sounds weird coming from me, but I was trying to see the positive in this whole, like, you know, pandemic narrative that came out, and we have to appreciate the frontline workers, and I said to myself, well, something positive is going to come from it, and indeed, a little something positive did, because a few people figured out that I can starve either way and not have to work 80 hours a week to do it. You know, pay us some more. They have put pressure on some segments of employment to raise wages, but it's not enough. It has not been enough. It's still not enough. It's not commensurate with the rate of inflation, not even close. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you don't have that, you've got nothing. I mean, right. you talked about a general strike so many times with me. I got to tell you, and I saw a couple of people try. I saw some young people. There's a whole Young People's Action. I forget the name of the group.
Right. And then it happened all by itself.
Yeah. So I thought maybe some positives would come of this. Some people would say, you know what? I depend a whole lot more on the guy who is there doing a service for me every day than the person who's a demagogue who's trying to tell me what he wants, what I want to hear.
Well, you look at Kroger food stores, okay? Mm-hmm. When the COVID crap came out, we love our workers. We're going to give them a raise because they're working during COVID. Nobody knows they already cut that raise out, okay? So those people are still making bupkis, all right? Everybody wanted to show, oh, look at us. We're a hero, just like all those corporations that supported Trump. Right. Oh, we're not going to support him anymore. Well, they're back to supporting the Trump crazies, the MAGAs. So it's all bullshit. And if people can say, you know what, I don't want to fall for this bullshit anymore. I don't want to stop talking to my family or my neighbor because politics or whatever is keeping us apart, because those are all the enemy. Why would I make my neighbor my enemy? Then we really have somewhere to start taking a stand.
Well, I'll tell you what. Before we run out of time, I'm going to tell you the ugliest prediction I have for this year outside of the one that you disagree with about the Republicans really actually seizing back the majority of the corridors of power, which you disagree with. Fair enough. We'll see. And by the end of the year, you and I will be having a different conversation about it. But anyway, one way or another, we're going to get there, hopefully. But anyway.
If that happens, we might as well kiss this country goodbye.
Look, fair enough. But here's something ugly that I don't hear anybody talking about, really, but I am going to touch upon it in the next hour intensely. And that is, you know, that whole thing that happened in the synagogue a couple days ago now.
All right.
I feel like that either organically it will be allowed to happen, or we will have literally staged things, because even the mainstream media is willing to use the words false flag together. Of course, they're talking about Putin and what he's about to set up and yada yada, and we'll see about that tomorrow night, by the way, on my show, when we get a report from Ukraine directly and a few other things. But, Maria... I think that we're going to see a return to the Middle Eastern boogeyman of terrorism. Now, I don't know if they're going to...
But the guy was a British national.
Oh, yeah.
That's what people forget. He was a British national.
Of course.
And, of course, then you saw the next day and the day after, everybody, including Biden, anti-Semitism, the old let's hide behind the anti-Semitism thing, while Israel's asking us, by the way, for another $1 billion a year.
Oh, well, why not? And meanwhile...
While they're spying on their own journalists and their own people with the Pegasus software, let alone us and, you know, everybody else on Earth.
Oh, certainly, and I agree with all, you know, with all that, but here's the thing. I think they're going to wheel out the war on terror again. I think they're going to resurrect it. This year, and I'm not saying that this guy is anything of significance, and I'm not even speaking to the reality of the reports here. It's very confusing. He wants to talk to his sister. His sister supposedly killed people in the battlefield, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I'm not even going to cover the details on here, because I think it is the first of many incidents that they're going to start calling terrorism.
Well, Biden's administration didn't by accident just start an office for domestic terrorism.
Well, there's...
We're thinking it'll be the white supremacist terrorist in this country, but who knows how that will be used.
No, I understand that. And I'm not saying that I think it's going to be all white supremacy terrorism, but here's the thing. I think they're also going to wheel out the Middle Eastern terrorist plots again.
Well, maybe they will. You know, it's the same old bullshit with them. You know, they'll roll out the Middle Eastern crap, but we're still supporting Saudi Arabia and sending them, you know, more and more weapons, even though Congress voted against it. Even Biden went along with it, just like Trump did.
You know, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Wait a minute. You know, there's a common link there, created by the British Empire, basically.
Hmm.
Huh. Anyway, I'm sorry, I digress. You know, here we go with our partners on the other side of the ocean there, you know, the people that we allegedly won our freedom from.
Right. Tell that to the gold trim on the flags in the U.S. courts.
Well, you know, Maria, details.
Yeah, small, short details. Here's another prophecy I have for you.
Sure. Okay. Go for it.
Once the queen drops dead, the royal family's going to be over. Mm. It'll just take a short while, but they'll be over, and the people in the U.K. will say, why were we supporting these bloodsuckers all these years?
So one last thing I'm going to pick your brain on since you bring up the royal family. How about Prince Andrew and what's maybe going to come up here in his finally, you know, there was the whole thing about him getting served and this and that. And, of course, Ghislaine has now been convicted on 5 out of 6 counts and all that good stuff. I know they're not directly related, but they're related. Thing is, what about that? You think we're going to actually see, oh, I don't know, maybe the guy who got all of his military titles and stuff stripped from him actually have to testify or maybe have to give up information or maybe some
or
freedom?
Maybe or he'll suddenly drop dead.
Ooh. Okay.
That could happen. You listen, the queen had no problem getting rid of whoever she wanted, and we'll call Lady Diana into question.
Sure.
And if anybody's watched the series The Crown, which I recommend, it's very believable that they wanted to get rid of her, let alone all the other, you know, oddities around her death.
Right.
So I think it's time for kings and queens to just be players in a deck of cards.
There's a guy who wrote a very interesting book on this not too long ago named Steve Ubaney, and the name of the book is literally Who Murdered Diana, and he's got a Who Murdered book series, actually. I might put you in touch with him. I think you might find him real interesting. He's got one on FDR, one on Diana, and one on Elvis, believe it or not.
So, yeah, I've been kind of picking up lately that they're trying to say Elvis was killed.
Yeah.
But I believe Elvis was killed by his own fans, to tell you the truth. Mm. Well, they never allowed him to have a normal life. So there you have it. And, of course, Colonel Parker, who's as criminal as they come.
Right.
So I'm sure he had a big part in that.
Well, that's the thing is I took a look at what's in Ubaney's book about Elvis, and I would not have normally concurred. I figured he was just another one of these tragic stories, you know.
Yeah, none of them are tragic.
Well,
none of them are tragic stories. They're all deliberate.
Well, but that's the thing is that, you know, after taking a look at some of this stuff, I'm going, wait a minute, there are some serious problems with the narrative that we all got to know there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't
know. Of course, never get told the truth. The same thing with John Lennon.
Of course.
Well, you know, so innocent schmucks go to jail, like Sirhan Sirhan, who was, again, denied parole, even though he was approved for it, but Newsom didn't want to give him parole.
Right.
And Sirhan was a patsy, just like Lee Harvey Oswald. And just like, you know, what the hell his name was with Martin Luther King. I mean, after a while, it's hard to keep track of all these assassinations, but you know that our government was behind pretty much all of them.
Well, that's the thing. And either, again, whether it's allowed to happen or it is caused to happen, there's always an element of that thing we call our government, right, that seems to be lurking in all of the deep, dark crevices of, oh, I don't know, every murder possible.
Right, right.
You know, but
everybody should do a little review on Herbert Hoover and see what kind of a freak he was.
Well, and see, that's the funny thing is that he actually makes an interesting case about FDR possibly have been knocked off.
Well, if it wasn't for, what was that guy that wrote War is a Racket? If it wasn't for him saving Roosevelt's life, he would have been dead.
Smedley Butler, you're talking
there
about.
There
you go. Yep. No.
He knew about the plot. He wrote a book about it. But how many Americans are going to learn that in school where they don't even want to teach a basic history?
Well, you know, that and no cursive and all that good stuff. But you'll get a lot of basic history, real facts, real news at maria.net. And, of course, we do Hell and High Water over there, and it does get run through the Ocelli.com member section as well. But subscribe to Maria at maria.net. Check out her work. And if you don't know who she is, you know, welcome to planet Earth as far as
I'm
concerned.
What can I tell you? Forget about it.
Forget about it. Mom, thanks for doing this with me.
My pleasure, Chuck. You take care.
Okay, in the next hour, we'll be talking to James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Stick around.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia,
by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
Uncle, do you remember that time when the year 2012 was going to create the apocalypse, end of the world?
Right. And I thought it would come to the end.
Did it ever end up that way?
No.
Yeah.
Like we say, the only way it will end is when he is ready for
That's
it
right.
to end. That's how it is.
So if you want the real truth about 2012, you better listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Radio podcast.com.
Yeah, forget it's John Cusack.
John Cusack
doesn't know what he's talking about.
Know what he's talking actually about. Correct.
But we here at the Ocelli Radio Network sure do.
Do you sure understand and understand where it's actually coming from?
Ocelli.com.
Chili.com.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. Chuck Ocelli.
The second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com. But, of course, you could be some other time, some other place, catching this via your podcast catcher du jour. So, anyway, here we are on a Wednesday, and many thanks to Maria Heller for being on in the first hour. Not what I expected, and it's not going to be able to be sent to the AM and FM radio stations for sure, because can't control the mouth that roars. But anyway, speaking of somebody else who I've been acquainted with for some time, I was thinking back, actually, to I think it was 2008 that I first encountered this guy named James Corbett and CorbettReport.com, and it was a bustling little place filled with lots of interesting information. I think I started to bug him about some JFK presentations he was doing. A couple years later, he has me on his radio show, And I felt strange about being like the Lee Harvey Oswald expert, but I did it a couple times for Mr. Corbett just to, you know, keep him up to speed about what it is, could be known about the elusive figure that is Lee Harvey Oswald. And he obviously bettered me much later by doing a an interesting short called Meet Lee Harvey Oswald. And he's done a lot of stuff. He's probably one of the most prolific independent media people out there. If you don't know, again, not sure how you found my show if you're even on the internet and you don't know who James Corbett is, CorbettReport.com. Tonight, I'm going to talk to him about something that has frustrated me over the years, very much so, because I spent time talking to you about ISIS. I spent time talking to you about some of the characters that are allegedly at the foundational reality of that alleged organization. I have talked to you about Al-Qaeda, a phrase I borrowed from somebody that is with me tonight. And, you know, there's a lot to Al-Qaeda. There's a lot to the torture scandals. There's a lot to the phonied-up war on terror. And what can I say? A lot of listeners didn't want to hear it anymore. I got frustrated. Now, I got a lot of patience when it comes to talking about the Kennedy assassination, because otherwise I would have gone insane after about 30 years of doing it. But this frustrates me to no end. It's like people don't want to hear it. People don't want to hear it. But here's the thing. James Corbett has a new series on Al-Qaeda, which is just remarkable. It's absolutely perfect. It is so well articulated, so well done. It's playing on the stream at Ocelli.com radio. Not now, obviously, because I'm speaking to you, but it's on there when we do our rotations of replays and stuff like that, with permission from James Corbett, of course, who told me a long time ago if I wanted to take any of his shows and put them in the rotation, I could. And you've got to hear this. If you haven't heard it on my stream already, I'm telling you, go over to CorbettReport.com and you can support James Corbett and sign up as a member over there. Guess what? I am one also. James Corbett, how you doing tonight, sir?
I am doing as well as can be expected given the circumstances, and I will try to keep things clean for your AM radio audience.
Well, maybe I can send you along, but Maria was in a mood. A couple glasses of wine, and look, it's an Italian lady from New York. What are you going to do? Anyways, James, again, this series on Al-Qaeda, and I do want to stick to this. Usually I love to pick your brain, but I almost don't need to. See, part one, you're saying all the things that I have been trying to say, and I took many, many hours to say, but you do it in a very concise manner, very professional manner. By the way, if you go over to CorbettReport.com, higher quality media, which James has developed over the years, if you're not aware, for God's sake, go over there. Anyway, this series, what possessed you to come out with this series at this time, James?
So the first part of this series is a three-part documentary series. The first two parts have been released so far. And the first part, of course, was released on 9/11/2021, i.e. the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And I've been thinking for a while about what I would do for a 20th anniversary of 9/11 coverage. I was thinking about that question even before the whole crisis that we've been steeped into over the past couple of years. But when that crisis came along, I thought, well, I mean, is there even a point to this anymore? 9/11 is so yesterday's conversation. Now we're in the new generated crisis, and all our efforts should be spent on that. And so there was a time in 2020-21 where I was thinking, well, maybe I won't even do anything particularly special for 20th anniversary coverage. Maybe I'll just go on with the crisis that we're living through. However, it actually occurred to me around the summertime of 2021 that no, in fact, what we are living through is the beginning of the erection of the biosecurity state. And the biosecurity state is not really a replacement of, but maybe an extension of the homeland security state. And the foundational myth for the creation of the homeland security state in the 21st century was 9/11. It is the Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda myth. And so in order to really, truly take advantage of this moment when so many people are starting for the first time to question the political reality that they're living in, I thought, hey, this is the perfect time to let those people who are just switching on now know about the fact that they were absolutely top to bottom lied to about the entire war of terror that has dominated their lives for the past two decades and that was used to ramrod through things like the Patriot Act and other absolutely transformative pieces of legislation that is now shaping the world we're living in. And now we're being asked to once again completely reshape our world based on emergency legislation that has to be passed now during this time of crisis. Maybe we can get a few people to realize the lies that they've already been fed and thus more effectively question the lies they're being fed today. So I think it is perhaps even more important now in a way than it was 10 years ago, say, to be putting this information out there right at this moment, right as they're trying to push the next stage of this generated crisis.
Right. Look, I agree with you entirely, but I got to tell you, I shared your first inclination when it came around to the 20th anniversary, where I just felt like there's almost no point. Nobody's hearing this because we live now in an age where there are adults wandering around who do not know that there was a reality previous to the post 9/11 security state. And things like surveillance capitalism and things like anti-social media mining individuals directly, indirectly, every single way for data. This is a different reality. And it almost seemed like nobody wanted to hear this, that maybe the foundational boogeyman in the first place is something you should understand, because guess what? They're going to give us another invisible enemy. And they have done that now. So before the current, you know, bio crisis, before that, you didn't necessarily think that it was going to go beyond, well, look, it's sort of accepted. People have given up. I mean, I've gone through time periods like this on other points that I've tried to make, too, where, frankly, you get exhausted. And you have a lot of stuff in your archives, even, where you could have just said, look, you know what? 9/11 anniversary, let me point to the 50 other things I've already done. And you could have done that. And you know what? I wouldn't have blamed you. But this is a remarkable piece of work in that it is not just, and you know, pardon me for using some blunt and really ugly terms here, but it's not just conspiracy theory. It's not just, you know, James Corbett's, you know, ideas about what could have happened. You've loaded this thing with verifiable history, as per usual, open source intelligence. Okay, you've absolutely packed it. I was just listening to it, by the way, and there is a, you know, a video version of it, and there's an audio version of it on CorbettReport.com. I urge everybody, and I'm going to give you guys links to that, but you know, in the show notes and everything when the podcast comes out. But the point is that you could have just pointed back to your archives, in my estimation. And you could have said, look, I've already covered this. Here it is. But you went for this all the way. And quite honestly, you've done something that is so remarkable in that it is filled with information that is incontrovertible to begin with. Just when you're laying the foundation in part one, and I didn't get all the way through part two just yet because I kept rewinding part one, by the way, James. Because I went, whoa, he just put all of that into perspective. Again, I'm one of these people that's a little too wordy sometimes. And this would have taken me an hour. You kill it in 2 minutes. And I'm going, man, this is really a serious piece, a culmination of a whole lot of other work that you've already done. And it's really, really great. And again, mostly James's stuff is out there for free. I do urge you to support him. And again, you can sign up for one American dollar, depending on where you're sitting, over at CorbettReport.com if you like, and get access to some other features like being able to comment on the website, etc. But I want to stick to this. What possessed you to really, I mean, I know what you said there, and that makes a lot of sense. But why couldn't you have just pointed back in the archives? Is there something coming up in this that is going to be, I don't know, a little more up to date than maybe some work, and you felt like you needed to update it and really consolidate it into one coherent, you know, series?
I think there are a few different things that are going on here, different motivations. And first, before we proceed, let me just stress to the audience out there, the entire documentary so far, and eventually when it is completed, will be available at corporatereport.com/Al-Qaeda, A-L-Q-A-E-D-A. And if you type that in, you will get not only the audio and video that you were talking about there, but the hyperlinked transcript. Every single word that I speak in the entire documentary, all of the clips, are there in the 30,000-word document right now, and counting, with literally hundreds and hundreds of references. I haven't counted them up, but there are a lot of references because it is always important for me to back up what I'm saying with documented sources. And so I appreciate that, and I'm very grateful that you, as a researcher yourself and as someone who tries to communicate information to others, can appreciate how incredibly difficult it is to condense vast reams of knowledge and information down into mere paragraphs. There are literally entire books that I read in preparation for this documentary that have been condensed into a few sentences. Mm-hmm. It is insanity. But I'm trying to do the best that I can with that. And the reason, I think one of the key reasons that I'm doing this is, well, actually, I'd say there was at the very first level of analysis, there are the two audiences that I'm trying to reach. There is the one audience, which I just described in that previous section, where I talked about the new people who are coming into this for the first time, starting to question, do not have only ever heard of the crazy 9/11 conspiracy theories and never given them much credence, who are now perhaps willing to take a look at them now that we have a couple of decades of breathing room. But secondarily, this is also intended for people who consider themselves to be knowledgeable or aware of the 9/11 truth movement and what it's done over the years and what have you, because I think that conversation has been largely, I like to say, stuck on stupid, at the very least stuck in a ditch for the past several years, repeatedly and endlessly rehashing the fireworks of 9/11, the explosion, the, oh, look at this building coming down, over and over and over. And that is all that 9/11 is to a lot of people right now. It is simply those firework events that took place on that specific day.
Well, let me interrupt you there. Let me interrupt you there.
Expand that conversation out, because this is a decades-long, if not centuries-long, part of a broader geopolitical game that's been going on since before you and I were born, and will presumably be going on for some time thereafter, after we shuffle off this mortal coil. This is part of a gigantic game that is being played that, if all we ever do is concentrate on the fireworks of the day of 9/11, then to a certain extent, the terrorists, as in the people who really directed that operation, not Osama bin Laden and some men in Afghanistan, but the real terrorists of that day, will win, because they have successfully distracted the public from ever putting pieces together about the greater question, about the whys of that day, because we are endlessly looking at the hows of that particular moment in time.
Right. And that is precisely where I wanted to stop you, because that is all the mainstream media did for the 20th anniversary, you see. They focused on the fireworks, like you said. You, in this series, I'll just give people an example. At the very beginning, I'm not spoiling the whole thing for anybody. It's so densely packed. Even if I talked about it for the remainder of my time, I couldn't get to it. Okay? It's not there. But let me just throw something at you. The deal is that you go to the initial interviews that were first seen, that have been reused, rehashed, re-examined over and over and over again. You know, the bin Laden who shows up in a secret meeting, speaks to a journalist. And then what follows? You lay out a timeline to start with right there. Here's what follows way before the events, a few years before anyway, the events of 9/11. You start in that area. And to me, it was like, that is the perfect way to relate that timeline, where the next thing we're confronted with is there are the bombing at the embassy, and then we're going to get into what came next, exactly what this was. And you literally paused in the middle of giving all these facts and figures and analyzed it, I mean, just with absolute salient precision, okay, and said, this is stagecraft. This is being staged for a point to be made. Now, you might want to consider who the prop master is, who the stage master is, and who the audience is intended to be. This is what I took from your presentation, by the way. I know you didn't put it like this because, well, you're much more linguistically talented than myself. But the point is, this gets across. And your point is well taken that this is not just for the uninitiated, but this is also for the well-seasoned individual who might have considered these things in the past, but over the course of time, a lot of these things have gotten lost. Who remembers Al-Qaeda? We had ISIS for years, didn't we? You know what I'm saying? Like, here we go with a whole other dynamic. And, of course, there's plenty of questions there. And I went to great pains on this very show to bring you people that explained, look at who these assets belong to begin with. Look at who they are. Baghdadi keeps dying. That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, all of that. And you already had this before you with Al-Qaeda because we have Bin Laden. Did he die? Did they have... You know, the old adage of did they drag the dialysis machine into the desert? You know, how do you miss a 6'3" Saudi Arabian in the... Okay, anyway, we know what we're saying here. The point is that you put it together so well. I mean, I can imagine it's a mountain of work. I can see the mountain of work coming to fruition in this thing. And it's just remarkable to me. So... Let's continue on beyond motivation and why it is that you felt it necessary to make sure to lay out the history as well. Do you think that that has been forgotten even by the most well-meaning individuals who would question the given historical narrative by the powers that should not be? Or is it, was it a journey for you personally even where you had to relearn that which you had already come to accept as common knowledge for yourself? I mean, tell me about that.
I certainly have forgotten more than I think a lot of people will ever know, and I don't mean that in a bragging kind of sense. It's almost in a lamenting kind of sense, because I have read so much over the years that at certain points people will ask me, okay, so what's the top two or three things people should concentrate on if they want to know about 9/11, which is almost an unanswerable question for me at this point, because my mind boggles. There are so many important things that I want to talk about, and so this is, to a certain extent, yes, a distillation of a decade and a half of research that I've done on this subject into a format that hopefully at the end will hopefully clock in under 5 hours, but maybe somewhere around the 5 hour mark, of all of this information that puts the context to the mere data, the mere information that we can accumulate on subjects like this. Because one of the ways that the corporate-controlled media lies to its audience is not by directly stating things that are not true, but by stating things that are true in a completely decontextualized manner so that you do not understand the importance of what is being said. And you allude, for example, to the miraculous multiple deaths and captures of many people involved with, say, Al-Qaeda in Iraq or ISIS or some of the other new forms of the boogeyman that have come along in the past couple of decades, and which I absolutely will be covering in part three of this documentary as we extend the timeline forward. But without that context, without knowing, oh, this is about the sixth time they've called this person dead, maybe we should be questioning what they're really telling us. Without that extra context, we cannot understand these facts and figures. So I really do want this to be a distillation as much as possible of the history, the context, the greater story, so that we can understand how this tapestry is woven. Because once I really do believe once we start to directly confront the new style of governance, the new paradigm of governance on the planet Earth, which is governance by crisis, generating a crisis and then ruling over the population in the name of that crisis. Once we really understand that mechanism and how it works and how to deconstruct it, we can do it again and again and again, including the current generated biosecurity crisis that they're trying to steep us in. So again, I think this is not history in some dry, dusty sense of, oh, it's just old names and figures and dates and things. This is absolutely the fabric around which the 21st century is being woven. Mm-hmm. And without that understanding, without that knowledge, without connecting those threads, we'll never be able to really understand, let alone confront what is being done in the name of this crisis.
See, now this leads me to a question which I did ask to my guest in the first hour, and I'm very sure I'm going to get a different answer. But I feel as though I'm looking at the... And I do hate to do this to you because you're not Mr. Predictions necessarily. Although, you know, you do New World next year at the end of the year and stuff. I mean, you know, and you give predictions of sorts on occasions. But quite frankly, you confine yourself mostly to the verifiable, the provable, the absolutely incontrovertible. That this is always. Why am I feeling like Don King for a second there? The thing is, this is where you're at usually, okay? But I'm going to ask you to speculate for a moment, because I heard the mainstream media start to throw around the word false, or the phrase, excuse me, false flag, in the past week. And it was about Putin, and it's a whole other subject, but I heard that, and then that was immediately followed in my mind by this event in Texas where the trope is used. Now, I'm sure there are very many open questions regarding what actually happened in the synagogue in Texas, and I'm not going to ask you to break that down. But the thing is, this hinted to me something that I was suspecting for some odd reason toward the end of last year, which is that we may again see the resurrection of the war on terror. Now, some people would say we don't need it because we constantly have a bio crisis occurring here one way or another. Because, as you said, crisis management, it's definitely the job of the future and the current and the recent past. But thing is, it wouldn't hurt to have another invisible enemy outside of the virus you can't see. It wouldn't hurt because it would give two levers of control to a massive amount of people, which are dictated to by their fears and are easily ruled on that principle. So I don't know. It just seems to me like is there some hints coming out that maybe I'm missing and I'm just intuitively picking up on this? Or am I just feeling deja vu here where in economic trouble after a crisis, the terrorism boogeyman works pretty good. Let's bring that back out because we don't really have a Soviet Union and a Cold War to run, but we can run the war on terror. Strategically, I'm talking obviously not from you and me, James, but you know what I'm saying here. This is something I'm starting to feel like is going to come up here real fast this year. Do you think I'm just seeing things?
No, I think you're seeing what has been laid out for a couple of years now, which is an attempt to connect a number of the threads of the various crises by which the ruling class seeks to rule over us or uses the hobgoblins through which they can ramrod various new security laws, etc. in. One of which, of course, is the old terror boogeyman and the concept of false flag terrorism. But I think that actually ties in to the geopolitical situation and the new Cold War that we're constantly told is being waged right now. And that also ties into a new narrative, or at least a newly revived narrative over the past year or two, of domestic terrorism and domestic extremism. And all of these things are being woven together. I pointed this out last around the time of 9/11 last year, where we were getting new warnings from the FBI about domestic terrorists who may be linking up white supremacists, who may be linking up with ISIS and all things that truly make no sense, but they are now being put into the narrative mix precisely because it does make a narrative through which, once again, the solution is, well, what is the government going to do about it? I hope they can protect us, which, of course, is what this is all about in the first place. Now, this circles around something that I have always pointed to as one of the actual real tangible successes of the 9/11 truth movement. There aren't many that can be counted, but one of them was the, at least the awareness, the implanting of the awareness of the concept of false flag attacks and false flag terrorism in the general public consciousness. Because I remember quite vividly a decade and a half ago when I started getting into this and started talking to people about it, I remember quite vividly everyone I even talked to about this would inevitably ask the question, but why would the government attack itself? It was so incomprehensible to the average person that they literally needed you to walk through every step of it so that then they could dismiss it as conspiracy theorizing. That has changed, and I started to notice that several years ago. I remember, and I point to this often, there was a Yahoo News article within the first couple of days of the Boston Marathon bombing asking, was the Boston Marathon bombing a false flag? Which was the type of headline that you would not have seen, say, a decade or a decade and a half ago. It was quite a marked shift in the public consciousness going on. However, now that that concept has been implanted in the public's mind, I think it is being weaponized. And one of the ways it is being weaponized, exactly as you point out, in the past week, people might have heard of a false flag terror theory, conspiracy theory, coming from that conspiracy theorist, Jen Psaki, and the intelligence agencies of the United States. I wrote about this in my most recent newsletter, so people who want can take a look at that, 2022, the year ahead, where I talk about this new conspiracy theory that Putin is planting troops in the Ukraine who are going to attack Russian-backed forces in the Ukraine in order to give Putin a pretext to go in and save the Russian-backed forces. So it's generally, it is a false flag terror conspiracy theory that is now being forwarded by the White House.
Right.
So they're, in a sense, weaponizing that knowledge and trying to use it for their own purposes. And now we see special U.S. and Canadian special forces are operating in Ukraine as well. I wonder what they're going to get up to. But I think that, again, brings it all back around to terrorism, geopolitics. They're all swirling around. And, of course, bioterrorism is an important part of this. And I released a documentary in November of 2020 called False Flags and the Dawn of Bioterrorism, right, where I talked about now the biosecurity state is coming into view. What is the most logical way for them to bring that terror boogeyman back out of the closet? It is in the form of bioterrorism. So I, unfortunately, can very much see them setting the pieces in place for a potential bioterror event. And just last year, we saw Bill Gates coming out talking about smallpox as a potential bioterror weapon. And what are we going to do about this? And, when the terrorists hit, it's going to be panic and pandemonium unless we have this and that and this in place, all of the pieces of the biosecurity puzzle, essentially. So, yes, terrorism is not going away. The concept is not going away. It's just morphing to fit the needs of the oligarchy in this particular moment in time.
Right. So just like the dirty bomb theory of the past, remember, they kept telling us that, we got to fight them over there so that they don't come over here and they don't use dirty bombs. I mean, not where you are because you're in Japan, but, in the allegedly United States of what used to be America, right? They kept saying, we're going to have dirty bombs. This is coming. They don't even need to make it operationally real. It can just be floated out there. And I'm pretty sure we're going to see, the new terrorist organization or the old one way or the other, whichever one seems more relatable to the American public. You know what they're planning to do? They're going to release something even worse that'll make, COVID do something, or they have smallpox. I was shocked, actually, when I heard him mention smallpox, of all things. And, I saw some articles last year about monkeypox and all kinds of weird things that were kind of being floated out there. I don't think they got much traction with it, but I see the potential there to cross it over because, as you said, when they're trying to tell us that the white supremacist, domestic terrorists were looking to work with ISIS, I mean, that's like saying, the Klan has now joined La Raza, okay? Because, I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? Okay. I mean, oil and water, you can almost mix those as opposed to these things. But anyway, the idea that they carry the fear, the doctrine of fear out there over the biological possibilities, the vulnerability has now been revealed, at least in the narrative, one way or another. Okay, and indeed, I'm not saying that the virus doesn't exist, okay? I want to make that clear. It does. You know, people are getting sick. Now, are they getting sick with something that is as dangerous as they say it is? Just like with terrorism, it does occur, but does it, you know, is it constantly being plotted and planned, and are we supposed to just celebrate our protectors who have prevented it? Oh, wait, they did that by us acquiescing and giving in and making sure that not only could surveillance capitalism be a thing, but surveillance in general is now just a given. Everywhere. How many people do you run into, honestly, James, who will tell you, I got nothing to hide. It's fine. Let them search my phone. Let them. I am still stunned by that when I hear it, and I should not be. It's very common. Anyway.
It is. In fact, of course, we know that famous phrase, nothing to hide, nothing to fear. I did a video specifically responding to that in 2013 mm-hmm. that I think is as relevant now as it ever was, talking about why that is a bogus argument. And it's pretty simple once you lay it out. I'll just let people watch that video if they want. Just look it up in my archives. Nothing to hide, nothing to fear. And I don't think anyone would dispute the fact that, you know, actually, I do have things that I want private, and that there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. You know, I always thought, I don't know, maybe this is one of those childish things, but I always thought that there were, you know, barriers that you could set where there was a matter of things that you wish to keep private because they may indeed have been embarrassing or just simply something that you did not wish shared with, you know, the people you got to deal with on a daily basis, or maybe allowed to be in the possession of an overreaching government that decides that it's going to, you know, do things like rendition you. I'm almost waiting for that term to reemerge. Rendition. Remember that one? Just saying, there's lots of tools sitting in the box there that I think are well established. And that's the thing. So, a counter argument, though, to this this idea that yes, indeed, there you think it's an accomplishment of the you know, of the 9/11 truth movement, and then they're weaponizing it. There's another possibility there, and I'm curious to see what your thoughts are here because you are, as I said earlier, a very skilled linguist, and have a very quick mind. So I'm curious. If you think that they have simply adopted terms that have become more relatable, you know, but just like grandpa who turns around and says, yeah, I love that rock and roll type stuff, have no idea what they're actually saying, but are simply following a script so they can alert people in such a way that is merely relatable. It doesn't necessarily mean the words have to be what they are. I mean, you know, here we go. The vaccine. What does a vaccine do? Well, I understood that it would expose you to a little bit of a disease so you wouldn't get the disease. But now they tell me that the vaccine, in air quotes, doesn't prevent you from getting it. But it's supposed to make it better, which sounds vaguely familiar. But, you know, they do repeat stuff so long as it works. And that's the thing. I'm wondering if it's just about the relatable language, and it's been weaponized not necessarily in the way of, like, being turned against us, you know, or pointed at us like a weapon, like some people might envision, but it's really just a verbal sort of judo where they're letting your energies work against you, and it's because you have an understanding of certain terms, so now they're going to use them. And they're going to misuse them, and they're going to reintroduce them as if they're quite normal to them, even though these were things they were trying to suppress, oh, not so long ago. So is it a victory in that they've normalized the idea? Or is it a victory in that, well, maybe not a victory, if it is only merely given another tool to the establishment to, well, as I stated earlier, sort of play a little bit of verbal judo with people and get them thinking along these lines so that when some ridiculous possibility is presented, it just goes along with the momentum of the language. What's your thoughts there?
I think that this is not necessarily – I mean, there are so many different things to say, one of which is that, of course, Jen Psaki is reading a script. I have no idea her understanding of the term false flag and her deep understanding of the history of that term and what it means and how it's been applied. Probably not that much. She's just a script reader. The people who are handing her that script, at least specifically in the context of this latest false flag accusation, are the unnamed intelligence agencies, which have determined – by some process that we're not allowed to see, that Russia is engaged in this false flag event.
Of course.
They, I think, probably do have a much better handle on what this term is, what it signifies, and also how it can be used amongst the public that now understands what that term means. And the weapon of false flag, the concept of false flag terrorism is not... That, in this case, it is not being turned against us. It is being turned against the State Department's enemies. And in fact, this is not a new phenomenon. You will have noticed, I'm sure, over the past decade, that any conspiracy theory about Putin, about Assad, about Xi Jinping is totally fair game and is generally not questioned when it is presented in the mainstream corporate-controlled media. I've seen any number or iteration of those types of conspiracy theories, and you know what? Some of them I also agree with. I think Putin did likely have a hand, and the FSB certainly did have a hand in the apartment bombings going on in Moscow in 1999, just as Putin was coming to power and looking for a way to consolidate his control over a failing regime. Right. I think there are genuine questions along those lines. But you will notice that the concept is only allowed to be used one way, at America's enemies, at the enemies of the empire. It would, to ever even raise the accusation against America itself, of course, that remains verboten in regular discourse. They're trying to, as you say, I think it is a judo move to, well, okay, the public is using this term, is aware of this term, so now we will make it seem as if it can only apply to other people. It can never apply to us. Oh. And we'll see if they'll go along with that. I think it's an attempt to shape an ongoing and the organic growth of language. And I think if there are voices like yours and mine out there for people to hear, I think it will not be a very effective trick. But that's the rub, isn't it? Especially in this age where voices like yours and mine are being censored heavily from a number of different platforms.
Right.
Obviously, this is about shaping narratives and information control, and we are in an information war. I know people have baggage around that term, infowar, and how it's been used, but it is true. There is a war on for your mind. We are engaged in information warfare, and as I think as long as independent voices are able to reach people like we have over the past couple of decades, we will win. Truth will win. People recognize and understand truth, and it takes an incredible amount of propaganda to get people to believe lies. But if all they ever hear is propaganda, then the propaganda will win, and I think that's what they're going for.
Fair enough. So look, I'm going to sidetrack away from the war on terror just for a second, because you mentioned Putin a few times here, and I think it is absolutely necessary to measure our response to the conspiracy theory and all of that, which the corporate media has now supported, because, as I stated at the top of the hour, I think on tomorrow night's show, I'm going to get a report, you know, live from somebody in Ukraine. And they're going to tell me about what it is they're seeing on the ground as an average citizen, not a military person, but they're going to tell me about what it is they're seeing, what their media is telling them. And I don't see a lot of people doing that, first of all. Second of all, I've been able to contact some people in, you know, Belarus, you know, and I'm sure you're familiar with, in the past, I've told you about contacts I've had personally over there. And they are telling me some interesting information. So the reason why I bring this up is not because I have the best sources or anything like that. What I'm saying is there may indeed be something going on the ground there that should indeed be alarming to people outside of that area, and more immediately to the people inside that area. And Belarus is like to the north of Ukraine, by the way, in case people are not familiar with their map. But anyway, back to it. There is indeed something happening there. Now, Have we been told the truth by our corporate mainstream media about it? Well, not likely. Is Jen Psaki going to straighten it all out for us from the podium? I don't think so. Is Joe Biden really going to speak to it during his really odd press conference today? I don't know if you saw that. No. Are we going to be able to get at it? Well, we're going to try. But same time, I think there's something to be said for sometimes it's not just a vapor. Sometimes something else is going on. And you're just simply being told, not you, James, but, you know, the general you. You are simply being told a cover story. And the cover story might bear some relation to reality. And that's actually the most dangerous type of cover story, the one that is kind of believable, not completely fictitious. And when you take a look at something that is complex like this situation in that part of the world, and not just because Putin does appreciate his ability to create chaos when you look at it objectively, but also because NATO does not have the most ethical track record when it comes to things like this. And we've talked about it many times on the show. You have done entire things about NATO's behavior, okay, in various places. I mean, gee, what would be the thing? We could talk about Italy. We could talk about, you know, the stay-behind operations. We could talk about, okay, yeah, all past history, I know. But the thing is, there are many things to consider, and the possibility that, you know, a partial truth being put out there as propaganda is merely a smokescreen for something that inevitably is far worse is also a possibility here. And I don't give anybody a pass on their ethical past, because anybody who's in power pretty much anywhere at this point in time are all suspect when it comes to their motivations. So about this with Ukraine, just saying, I mean, there's something to be said about the narrative versus the reality versus what it is we're going to be able to even mine from any source that, you know, is open or close to the situation. What are your thoughts on that before I go back to, again, this great series you've done on Al-Qaeda?
In a sense, this actually relates back to the heart of the Al-Qaeda story, mm-hmm. because as with the war on terror and that narrative that they've laid out regarding that and who the players are and what their affiliations are, I think similarly, when we talk geopolitics, we are also talking about a cover story, as you say. To use the old analogy, we're playing checkers while the people who are running the show are playing chess. Or to use my preferred analogy, we're looking at a 2D chessboard, we're looking at a 3D chessboard from a 2D perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's Putin versus NATO, and it's Xi versus America, or whatever the way that is simplified. That is not the case. And I actually do point this out in that recent article that I talk about, where I do come around to the question, is it possible that things in Ukraine are playing out exactly as Psaki and Nuland assert? Could this really be a carefully staged Russian operation to prepare the way for an invasion of Ukraine? Of course, it is possible. Let's not be naive here. Putin is an authoritarian who is putting Russia in lockstep with the Great Reset, and he is willing to stage terror attacks and assassinate his enemies in order to further his own political ambitions. Mm-hmm. The same can be said for Xi and Assad and all the other authoritarians who are held up in certain parts of the alternative media as the resistance to the NATO agenda.
Right.
As I've articulated many times, the BRICS are a phony opposition. The alternative financial infrastructure that the anti-NATO crowd is setting up is not alternative at all. The economic and military rise of the Chinese has been deliberately engineered by the same financial interests that built up the American empire. The technocrats openly lust after the authoritarian powers of communist China, and the Belt and Road promise is just debt diplomacy by another name. So there is a deeper game that is being played, on which I don't think we even see the real players in this game. We see the pieces that are placed on the 2D chessboard, the Putins and the Xis and what have you, as if they're really directing these teams that really are facing off against each other. There is a much deeper story. And you can go into my previous work on, say, China and the New World Order, or talking about the enemy of my enemy, one of my old podcasts on Putin and his place in this New World Order structure, etc. I think there is a much deeper game that's being played here. And to a certain extent, trying to scrutinize each move on the 2D chessboard as if there really are these two competing teams that are playing in the way that we think they are playing is itself the fundamental cover story. It's the naive part of this whole equation. It relates right back to the War on Terror. Again, thinking that Al-Qaeda is exactly what it purports to be. It is this group of radical Muslims led by this man in Afghanistan, well, until he died anyway. And they really did stage these attacks completely independently, and there was, we had no idea. And if, again, that is a cover story that is being used to hide a much deeper story. And once again, I think peeling back any part of this deeper story, you start to be able to recognize that level of lie and that's the deeper reality in other spheres, like the geopolitical sphere, for example.
Okay, so just quick break here. James, you do realize all the conversations you and I have had over the years, and we've had many. You can find some of them in the archives at CorbettReport.com. You can find some of them at Ocelli.com. Quite frankly, just a little quick side note. You do realize that I come up with an improvisational structure to every one of these conversations, right? I mean, on the fly.
Sure. Yeah.
No script. I don't do scripts. You, my friend, know how to write a script, but not in a negative way. I don't do a script, but I always do these things on the fly. I find a granite and I make a shape, and I'm not sure what it's going to be at the beginning, but believe me, it'll make sense by the end. So, I like to do that, especially because some people say that he's got no plan at all when he does these things. I don't. You're right. When I start, I don't. It emerges. Anyways, so it's the way my mind works. I just have fun with that. But anyway, I love this piece of work so far. Again, I have not even completed the second part, because I had to rewind, I had to go back. I mean, listen to how James basically just did 4 hours of my shows on Russia and did an explanation that is basically the same in less than 4 minutes. This is the way it is. Anyway, about this series, can we expect from you, as you bring this to it's only going to be three parts, right?
That is the plan. I really hope it will not be more than that, because I will collapse into a puddle on the floor if it's any more.
Well, look, I want you to know that I appreciate all of the hard work that I know has to have gone into this. This is why not only am I getting that report tomorrow night, but I'm going to have Larry Hancock on, who is the author of Creating Chaos. I don't know if you've ever read that book, James, but Larry's a very responsible historian and author. I'm sure you're familiar with Larry Hancock's work in the JFK field. Anyways, that is one thing, and I'm glad we took the side trip. But back to the Al-Qaeda thing, here's my final question, and then any other things you want to toss in here on your way out the door, more than happy to just give you the floor. But, given that we could see let's call it a hybrid of boogeymen, okay, in the invisible enemy category that could be utilized for a whole lot of purposes, as we've had to learn, well, since 9/11, really. Should have learned it before that, but since 9/11, I mean, it's been blatantly, publicly done in broad daylight, okay? Do you think that there may be some reanimation of the Al-Qaeda as the primary enemy? And who knows, maybe, the people in the military-industrial complex, I don't think they're making a lot of money right now for them. I think they need a war in order to, make themselves solvent again. Because, making $1 billion when you could have made 10, I mean, you lost $9 billion, didn't you? So, thing is, I'm wondering if they're going to reanimate Al-Qaeda and say that they've reemerged because we knocked out ISIS, because I mean, I'm oversimplifying here, but I can't help myself, because this is too much. And again, learn about the history, the reality, the wow, just, behind the veil, if you will, with this series at CorbettReport.com, again, on Al-Qaeda. And look, even if you don't remember how to get it on the website, I'll give you the link. And if you go and there's a search function on CorbettReport.com, works very well, just so you know. And you can find out about a lot of different things. And if you wanted to, you can even go back to that very first appearance I did with James about Lee Harvey Oswald on Corbett Report Radio oh so many years ago. But anyway, I want to also thank you for doing this with me. And I cede the last 7-8 minutes to you to explain that, if we're going to see a resurrection of Al-Qaeda in particular. And then any other notes that you think are serious points of interest or a highlight or something from the series thus far? Go ahead.
Well, the way that I envision it is, I think the would-be narrative controllers have a deck of cards, and they could play any of those cards at any time. And one of the cards in that deck certainly is Al-Qaeda, the old boogeyman brand that they spent so much time building up, and obviously used to such great effect in the first decade or two of this century. That's still in the deck, and they still can play it. And as evidence of that, I will cite last September when the fall of Afghanistan was happening and the Taliban taking over and all those dramatic events. There were reports at that time this could lead to the re-rise of Al-Qaeda and they could regroup. And there were reports to that effect at that time. And that coincided with the Department of Homeland Security statement that I mentioned earlier, citing domestic extremists collaborating with ISIS and throw Al-Qaeda into that stew. So it is certainly possible that they could go back to that card and play it exactly as they did a couple of decades ago. I think more likely it is going to be just a part of the evolving nature of the quote-unquote terrorist boogeyman, which this whole thing was predicated on. We certainly haven't heard the last of Islamic extremism, and that at the very least will come into play in places like, say, Xinjiang, of course, an extremely sensitive area of China where now, of course, it's now politically acceptable to care about the Uyghurs and their political plight, exactly until it isn't politically acceptable to care about it, in which case they will be discarded like so many other convenient causes du jour have been used by the American Empire and their allies throughout this entire war of terror, let alone throughout recorded history. I mean, the Kurds, for example, constantly being brought up when convenient and then discarded by the wayside when not convenient.
Oh, for a deep
cases
cut.
Like that.
For a deep cut, I give you the Yazidis, if you remember that one. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly right.
Continue, sir.
So I trust your listeners will at least be able to understand that concept. Yes, like Libya. Oh, we must care about the people of Libya. Until we've bombed our country to smithereens and now there are open slave markets operating in the country, whatever, who cares? We liberated them by bombing them to death.
Mm-hmm.
That concept. So we will hear more about Islamic extremism in some form in the future, but it could be the good guys, because we saw that remarkable turn that took place over the past decade where suddenly, well, Al-Qaeda are the good guys in Syria, and we're kind of on their side against Assad. So, you know, we shouldn't be completely against Al-Qaeda, and maybe we might want to fund them and arm them and train them. Just utter nonsense that goes against previous nonsense, because none of it necessarily has to make sense for any longer than it absolutely has to, just a few seconds if need be, just long enough to slip something through the door. So yes, the terror card is still there. It can still be played. In part three of the documentary, I'm going to take the story from 9/11 and bring it up to the doorstep of today, where at the very least, even completely self-interested Americans who don't care about any other part of the world or anything else that's happening should at the very least now be aware that this entire Department of Homeland Security war on terror apparatus is now being set up to be wielded against them. We are starting to see this in the domestic terror extremism idea that is now being inserted, that is also, I think, going to be tied into the biosecurity agenda. And, well, yeah, why don't you have your health pass or whatever, your government-issued ID, your government-issued central bank digital currency? A lot of different narratives are coming together. And I think it behooves us to know as much as possible about the real history so we do not get suckered into going along with the story that is handed to us, because we know where that has gotten us so far. Hopefully we can divert this raging freight train before we get there. On that note, I cannot promise when part three will be coming. All I can say is it will come when it comes, and it might take some months to get there. Again, I know you can appreciate this, but for people out there who don't make media content themselves, these things do not write themselves. It takes a lot of effort. So I am beginning, but it will take a while for me to get there, and it'll be ready when it's ready.
Well, look, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a whole bunch of stuff in your archives either. You can take a look at how big oil conquered the world. You can take a look at the crime of the century having to do with the Federal Reserve, just to mention a couple of the past greatest hits. Also, quite frankly, I love your Meet Whoever series, which, by the way, there was a Meet Osama bin Laden in there, if I remember correctly. Along with Meet Lee Harvey Oswald.
No, there was a Meet Ayman al-Zawahiri. I don't think I did Osama specifically.
You didn't do Osama specifically? I thought you did.
I did a last word on Osama bin Laden. I've done some other works on him, but okay. I don't think I did a Meet series on him.
Well, it looks like I need to go back into the Corbett Report archives and restudy.
I might well have. I've forgotten at this point, to be honest.
But that's the thing.
What have I done?
There is so much content, though. I mean, really, I love the, you know, the Century of Enslavement, you know, which was about the Federal Reserve, a serious highlight. If you haven't seen it, go over there and check that out, too, after you check out this new one on Al-Qaeda, because it's amazing. CorbettReport.com. James Corbett, I thank you so much for joining me and for having repeatedly put up with me on my show and even had me as a guest on yours. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it, Chuck. Anytime.
Anyway, guys, we're all done for tonight, so remember this. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.